players today echo those comments and voice their concerns with it. J.J. Watt and Richard Sherman among those. Well, just a moment ago, Tom Pelissero, who covers the NFL for the NFL Network and NFL.com, reported the NFL Players Association Executive Committee voted 6-5 not to recommend the current CBA proposal. Now, it's simply a recommendation. It does go to the 32-man Board of Representatives. So it's not over, but it looks like it's probably going to be more difficult to pass this proposal than was thought over the last 48 hours. When Adam Schefter reported on it, I think on Wednesday, in the lead of the story, he said that it very well could be done this week. Now it looks like that's probably unlikely. And then what happens next? So yesterday, part of my thought with this was, set aside the conversations around 14 teams in the postseason and 17 regular season games and everything else that goes into it, I thought the best news out of it would be, well, this ends that talk of, hey, is there going to be a work stoppage? Mm-hmm. And now that remains to be seen. So we'll see what happens here, but it looks like the Players Association is more likely to not accept the CBA. We'll see how it plays out, the proposal from the owners.
Yeah, and let me tell you this, because I didn't realize what the extra game was going to mean. I didn't look at the specifics. I know that they're kind of fighting over the owners want. They gave an extra percentage point in the last collective bargaining agreement that they didn't want to give. And so now they're trying to get more value for that percentage point that they gave up when it comes to TV revenue. So Darren Rovell says, okay, they're going to add this game. Here's the caveat. This is what's really messed up, and this is why the Players Association is like, oh, y'all weren't expecting us to read the fine print. The new NFL deal proposed by the owners would pay players a maximum of $250,000 for their game check for the 17th game in contracts that are already signed. So J.J. Watt, it's not like he would get more money. He would be capped out at $250,000 for that extra game. And many, many players in the league make at least $750,000 per game. So the owners, who are notoriously greedy, this seems a little excessive.
I think the owners are greedy.
100%.
That is a funny part of this conversation, whether we're talking about the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, whatever. If you're siding with owners versus players, you're siding with billionaires over the millionaires. Because the players are the ones that come across as greedy, I think, to fans a lot of the times. Well, they're all trying to make money. So, I guess greed is a part of it, but they're all trying to make as much as they can.
Yeah. What did we learn this week about money? Michael Bloomberg could buy all of the NBA teams and all of the NFL teams and still have money left over.
Yeah,
it'd be close.
Yeah, his Bloomberg's overall worth would be valued at more than all of the NBA teams from last year's projections. It's a good amount of money.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So the NFL owners proposing the maximum of $250,000 a week for Week 17 game checks is in bad faith, according to what Darren Rovell tweeted out earlier. He said 47% of the league's starters make more than $250,000 a game.
This could get really interesting.
It could. And the biggest thing is there will be a lot of public pressure applied, because one thing we do not want you to mess with is our football.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's going to be something to watch for sure. You know, the biggest story that we've been talking about is free agency, but this is an even bigger deal.
Yeah. Tom Brady will continue to be the leading conversation for the upcoming offseason until he makes a decision. It's not like something has to get done right now, but the deal that looked like it was probably going to be done by the end of the week. What has been the overall reaction, by the way, have you noticed, at least with the 17th game and the 14 teams in the postseason?
I haven't seen a lot. I just don't think the 17 games is going to happen. I think that they could add a playoff spot. And I honestly think players would be excited about that, because it's another opportunity to reach like incentives in their contract. Mm-hmm. By having another opportunity to play a game, it would make that one seed very, very valuable.
Yeah.
So you would have teams that are not resting players just to make sure, you know, they get that number one spot locked up.
Well, just like with the Major League Baseball idea of expanding the postseason there, what was one benefit that was brought up? that you would have more teams that would be in it late in the season, meaning their fans are more likely to be interested. Now, the NFL, it's not hurting for interest at any point in the season, but you would have more teams in weeks, I guess, 15 through 18 in this case.
Yes.
That their team, you would just have more teams that have a shot to get to the postseason, which would potentially create more interest for that team's fans to stay in it all the way until the end.
Yes. And so with more intrigue or more of a possibility, I think that would be true, that you would still see some packed stadiums for teams that are right there on that sort of bubble, maybe hovering right around 500, trying to get that extra win. I could imagine that it would
could help your Cowboys.
Yeah, no kidding, right? They probably would have been in with one more spot.
Was it not the Rams? Is that not right?
Is it the Rams that would have been in this year?
I thought that was the case.
Okay.
Yeah, in the NFC. But still, in terms of a chance to get in.
Oh, so dangle that carrot for one more week. Yeah, there you go. It's brutal.
Yeah, being Raiders were in the mix late.
There you go. Are you excited?
About TB12 coming out west? You're darn right. We'll come back, 656-9900. We can hit more in the NFL. We will this afternoon on, I don't know how exciting CBA talk is, but it is a big deal of what's going on with the NFL and, of course, changes that could come with it, whether it passes or not. The interest for fans and the players and owners would be different along the way as well. We'll talk more about that. Tennessee-Auburn, we'll get you ready for that game tomorrow. A big one where if the Vols could pull off a road upset, would at least change the conversation in some way. A tall task for sure. We'll cover all of that right here on Sports 180, 656 9900 to join us on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thanks for being with us today. Hope everybody has a great weekend coming up. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow morning, you have Saturday Sports Talk at 8 a.m. and the lead lap coming up at 10 a.m. presented by Food City. They'll, of course, talk about what happened Monday night with Ryan Newman. Great to see him out of the hospital. And NASCAR will move on out west and get ready for racing at Vegas. What's coming up on Saturday Sports Talk at 8 a.m. tomorrow, Joel?
Well, tomorrow's the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. So yeah. Sports miracles, best sports calls because of Al Michaels' iconic call from that game. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll preview Kansas and Baylor and, of course, Tennessee and Auburn, talk about the rest of it. And I'm sure Eric Kane has plenty of thoughts about what's been happening surrounding Rob Manfred, David Ortiz, all of that. So that and more from 8 to 10 tomorrow morning on Saturday Sports Talk.
Michaels is my guy. Love him.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best. I mean, I know that there were other people that grew up with some of the older broadcasters that they love, but Al Michaels, like for our generation, the GOAT.
You think so?
Yeah.
Everybody has different tastes. I mean, if you think about guys who've been doing it for a long time.
Jim Nance would be up there.
Nance, Costas are going to be two of the names brought up most quickly.
Is it not fair of me to automatically think of Pink Eye? Whenever I think of Bob Costas now, he's done so much work. He has been incredible to the sports community. And after that Olympics, that is the first mental picture that pops into my mind.
Was your question, is that unfair?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's unfair.
Totally.
Yeah. But
what it is.
Yeah, so Al Michaels would he be your favorite, or you say he's the best broadcaster? He would be my top guy. Like if you're ranking the play-by-play guys, I would put him number one. Versatility, the big spots, the famous calls. Yeah, he's got those. I mean, you're probably thinking with that miracle call, well, it doesn't get any better than this, but he's put together a pretty good career after the fact. Sunday Night Football has become the thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be Monday Night Football, and I think Sunday night has become the bigger primetime deal, and he's led the way there too. So yeah, he can do it all and really has.
Yeah, he really has. And I definitely think he would be the George Washington on my Mount Rushmore. Jim Nance would be a close second just because of Nance's versatility. I mean, he can call it all, and he's just so good and so even toned, and his voice is incredible. But when you think about Al Michaels, I don't know how you could ever pick anybody over him. If you're our age, I understand if you're older, if you're like 60, mm-hmm. you probably do have a little bit of a different. I think he would still be on the Mount Rushmore, but I think you have a different order.
Yeah. And it'll depend on the sport, of course, that you show the most interest in. But He would be right there at the top. I've been preachy the last couple of days, I feel like, with the Elam ending yesterday, so I don't want to tell anybody who to pick as their favorite, but that would be my guy at the top.
Yeah, because I know, like, Jeff Jacoby, he would have been all about Howard Cosell, and some of those other guys. Where do you put Marv Albert? Because I know you're a huge NBA guy. I mean, has been around forever in the NBA.
He'd be high on the list for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, current times, I think Tirico is terrific. Mike Tirico, his versatility as well. He long time with ESPN, moving to NBC. But Albert, when you think about his 90s NBA calls especially, a lot comes to mind for people. And me growing up in the 90s watching the NBA, of course, would make a huge impression there.
Yeah, yeah. So I just wanted to know what you thought about him.
And then you know who I think is incredibly either underrated or underappreciated or over-the-top criticized would be Joe Buck. I think he's really good.
I think he is really... I think him and Troy over the past couple of years have become the number two broadcast team outside of Tony Romo and Nance. So I just think that they're good. They have really gotten good. And Troy, I don't know, I appreciate it when he criticizes the Dallas Cowboys, because for a long time he got labeled as a homer online, and he's definitely not covering up for them anymore. He wants them to win. And so I like that.
Yeah, there have been some opportunities to criticize the Cowboys.
Yeah, yeah. When you look at college, what did you think? I always when you were saying you think he gets too much criticism, I always thought Vern Lundquist got way too much criticism.
Sure. Yeah,
it was over the top.
Danielson takes heat. You're in the SEC; it's going to come with the territory.
It's like, sorry for you. Yeah. Here comes the barrage of hate online.
Yeah, and Vern might have missed some names here or there along the end,
along
the line at the end.
Right,
but
he stayed too long at
Vern's
the party.
A legend, absolute legend.
Yeah. I loved him, and I like Musburger. Yeah, yeah. I miss Musburger.
Vern opening up the broadcast every Saturday afternoon, it felt like you were watching an SEC game. And I think that is a concern. Is it still going to have that SEC feel when the big game moves off to go to ABC, ESPN, whatever they end up doing? I think that is a concern some SEC fans, even though you might tweet or get on a message board or text your friends about it, how mad you're getting at Vern or Gary because they hate your team and all that stuff. When you turn that on, you still felt like you were watching, and I was being sarcastic, you felt like you were watching an SEC game.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I hope remains there.
Yeah. I think it will. The SEC is going to be, I mean, it's the number one commodity, right? It is the number one TV rights deal. I think I would put it ahead of the Big Ten. I know I'm biased, but
there's a reason. Those are the top two, though.
Yeah,
they're right there.
So we can argue that, but I don't think Sean McDonough is going to be doing, I hope not, the 3:30 SEC game, wherever it is. Oh, that would just be, I would bash my head in.
Not a McDonough fan?
No.
Okay.
No. No, it's still going to be whoever the best crew is at whatever network gets it. That's going to be who does the 3:30 game.
Joel, in the play-by-play conversation, did we miss anybody that would come to mind for you? And also, I want to give a shout out in terms of versatility. He's a big name. He's been around for a long time. Chris Fowler. You can go college football and then do tennis.
Oh, yeah.
And do it at the very top level. He's terrific.
Yeah, Fowler's probably got my dream job if I could pick a combination. If you're talking hockey, a lot of people are going to love Gary Thorne or Doc Emmerich, either of those two guys. Doc, who's now the voice of the Stanley Cup. Pat Summerall was probably one that I grew up with that I'd probably give a shout out
to. Summerall and Madden was a special combo.
Love that combination.
Yeah. Yeah, good choices there. So, again, depending on the sport and what time you come from, will depend on who you connect with the most in play-by-play and who you grow up watching.
Yeah. How do we get on the... Oh, it's coming up on Saturday Sports Talk. They're going to be talking about that tomorrow.
Yeah, Miracle on Ice 40th anniversary tomorrow.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So, hey, big days, big show. So tune in to Eric Kane, Joel Silverberg.
Yeah. One thing that people will always have opinions on would be broadcasters, good or not so good. There's a reason we do Festivus every year.
Yeah, you don't even have to say broadcasters. You could say there's one thing people are going to have opinions on. Something's good, something's not good.
Yeah, broadcasters or, anything in the world.
What has Barrett Salee stepped in that I missed? Why all the hate for Barrett?
I think that's pretty constant, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think that's just a today thing. I think usually days that end in Y is when people get mad at him.
Okay. Good to know. I you referenced that when he was on with us earlier. So I went down his timeline and I was like, oh my gosh, these people are just brutal.
Yeah, honestly, I have no idea if it was anything specific that he said. I just saw him sharing really, really hateful messages that had been sent to him.
I thought maybe,
mean stuff.
Yeah. Is it Fallon that does the mean tweets that makes celebrities read the mean
Jimmy
tweets?
Jimmy Kimmel, I believe.
Is it
does.
Kimmel? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's what Barrett was doing.
Yeah. I've had a few good ones. They're always appreciated.
Yeah, you've had some interesting ones lately. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks ago when you were just stating facts.
Last week, I guess. People got really mad at me when I thought it was just funny that Jeremy Pruitt on signing day was talking about places to come after their coaches, look at them, they stayed, and then 4 days later, three staff members left. People got mad at me for being negative. I didn't even realize it was negative. I just tweeted out that it had happened.
Old Negaval over there.
That's it, yeah. Trying to run down the program. 90 minutes, Sports 180 to go. We'll talk to Will Shelton. Game day on RockyTop.com coming up next. What does Tennessee need to do to try to pull off a win against Bruce Pearl's Tigers, which need a win coming off back-to-back losses? That's coming up next on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back for the second half of Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. We have another 90 minutes to go before Sports Talk will begin at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We go to the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline. We are pleased to welcome to the show Will Shelton, game day on RockyTop.com. Will, good afternoon. We appreciate the time as always. We're a few years in now to Tennessee versus Bruce Pearl, who of course had a terrific run as Tennessee's head coach. What has it been like for Tennessee fans? What is it now, Tennessee going up against Auburn and Bruce Pearl?
So it's really changed from that early run where, I guess it was the Donnie Kendall year, right? Was his first shot there at Auburn. And Tennessee, they didn't lose to him right away, which was good for everybody's sanity. And then, you know, Auburn was really bad there for a couple of years. There was a Wednesday night SEC tournament game there where Barnes beat him by like 30, not that terribly long ago. And then all of a sudden now, I think it's been really interesting that Pearl's teams have gotten the best of Tennessee's really excellent teams here. That game a couple of years ago in the SEC championship season, that was like the second game of SEC play where Auburn beat them in Knoxville when they had 1,000 offensive rebounds. And at that point, we hadn't really seen Tennessee level up. That was coming later in the year. So even though Pearl won that game, it didn't really register as, oh, these are the two best teams in the SEC going at each other at the time. But you did have some of that sense last year. And, of course, Auburn, you know, got the best of Tennessee twice, including that just strange and really costly SEC tournament championship where we've got the selection committee saying it denied Tennessee a one seed, certainly denied Tennessee the first SEC tournament win since 1979. So Pearl's teams have gotten the best here three in a row of really good Tennessee teams, and that certainly is frustrating for Tennessee fans. I know you got to be careful with any of that head-to-head stuff because Konzo just beat Bruce last week, so that can work the other way too for fans that don't like that comparison. So it'll be interesting to see here tomorrow. Auburn's banged up and got it going kind of the wrong way. This rivalry is always going to be unique. It's just hard to compare it to anything else because it's such a rare situation in general to have a guy come back into the league and coach a different team. There's always going to be Tennessee fans that love Bruce. I think all of us always are going to love those 6 years that he had here. But as long as Barnes continues to produce the way Tennessee produced the last 2 years and the way they've recruited to produce next year, and as long as they're not going to go on some huge 7 or 8 game losing streak to Pearl, then I think this is more fun than anything and has a chance to be fun. Certainly one that Tennessee needs to get tomorrow for sure.
Rick Barnes has been working on getting the attention of John Fulkerson and Eve Pons all week long, very critical during the last outing, and has said these guys just have to play better. They are the veterans on this team. People look at these guys. What do you think practice has been like for those two players, and what do you think you're going to see out of them on the road early Saturday?
Well, Fulkerson, I think he's done a good job overall. Not great in the first half against Vanderbilt, certainly, but he's done a really good job overall to use a Konzo Martin phrase, he's accepted the challenge. He's done what Tennessee has needed him to do without Lamonte Turner and gotten them to this point where they're still in even remote bubble conversations with five games left in the regular season. So I think we've kind of come to expect that you're going to get good stuff offensively from Fulkerson. He's kind of an underrated shot blocker because he's on the floor with Pons so often. Pons gets all that attention, but Fulkerson's become a really good defender at the rim too. Tennessee, we wrote about this today, Tennessee's the best shot-blocking team in the SEC, and they're doing this with Plavsic's the only 7-footer. He's not playing very much at all. They're doing it with one freak athlete, but just also some really good minutes from Fulkerson on the defensive end, and you've got Auburn, who's the best team in the league at getting to the free throw line. So that's a big point for tomorrow, those guys, not only offensively, but can they keep Tennessee safe at the rim? Some of that's stopping Austin Wiley in there, but a lot of it is stopping Auburn's guards when they get penetration. Can they defend well at the rim without putting these guys on the line a bunch? So I think Fulkerson has become just kind of a consistent expectation for Tennessee. I'm really interested to see what he does next year when you've got guards coming in that should draw so much more attention than what Tennessee's been able to produce from an opposing game plan here without Lamonte Turner this year. I think there's another level even that Fulkerson can get to when teams aren't, you know, focusing on him as really the number one option for Tennessee. And Pons, let's see, it would be concerning. It is concerning to me as a Tennessee fan that we're hearing the tendonitis word a lot with his knee. Is that going to cost him explosiveness? Is that going to cost him anything? Tennessee's got to have their best basketball right now. Everybody's a little beat up this time of the year. But if they're going to get this thing done at Auburn, if they're going to stay in the NCAA tournament conversation, they got to have both of those guys, both offensively and also just taking care of business at the rim and not giving anything easy to good teams like Auburn here down the stretch.
Will Shelton is with us game day on RockyTop.com. So what are the chances we see Tennessee's best basketball in the next five games, starting with tomorrow at Auburn?
So, you know, Auburn vulnerable with injury. That's a team, and several folks have thrown out this stat, that they rate really high in Ken Pomeroy's luck ratings. They've won a bunch of close games, and then now all of a sudden they've kind of got a case of the oh-no's. They've lost two games to teams that aren't very good overall in Missouri and Georgia. They shot so many threes, like 44 threes against LSU, and it worked. And I wonder now, especially down a man offensively, if that's kind of working against them where they're settling for more threes when they're really not overall a great three-point shooting team. So Tennessee's going to need to take advantage of some of that. You don't need that luck to swing back in Auburn's favor. Had a really hot shooting game against Tennessee last year in this matchup. So you need some of that to work to Tennessee's advantage. But there is kind of a path that I don't think a lot of us thought would be there 10 days ago, where Auburn's kind of reeling. Arkansas is really in free fall. And so there's this thing here where if Tennessee can find a way to get this done, you just feel really good about going into that Arkansas matchup again in Fayetteville with them in a bad situation. And if they can put those two together on the road, then all of a sudden you're at 17-11 and you're going to get Florida and Auburn at home. So I think the conversation about Tennessee could change fairly quickly between today and this time next week if they're able to start this thing with a win tomorrow. If they don't get the win tomorrow, to me, they're going to have to either win at Rupp Arena or they're going to have to – we're talking about multiple wins in the SEC tournament just to get back in the bubble conversation. So you need these guys. You need Vescovi to give you his best version of himself, the high assists and low turnovers. We've seen that mostly going forward. You need Josiah James to give you excellent rebounding that he gave you earlier in the year when he was healthy. And a lot of it, there's no pixie dust or anything like that, but you need Jordan Bowden to get some shots to go down. And I'm sure everything that can be tried, he has tried. Rick Barnes has tried all that stuff. You just need guys to knock down some open shots. You need Tennessee to get a little favorable, get a little hot in their shooting. That's what it's going to take, I think, at least tomorrow. And if they get through Arkansas after that, you're still going to need that kind of basketball, that higher percentage stuff against the Gators, certainly at Kentucky, and then against Auburn again here down the stretch.
Well, I'm kind of grasping at straws here, trying to figure out how Tennessee can break this home win streak that Auburn has. Am I thinking too much about the time of the game? Does that play into Tennessee's favor at all with it being so early?
That's a good question. I think it can't hurt Tennessee. Pearl has done a great job, as we all knew he would, building the atmosphere down there. And a lot of that is, you know, getting students involved, getting fans involved, taking advantage of of evening primetime tip-offs and all that stuff. This is still, you know, it's a nationally televised game. I think that's still a big deal for this particular Tennessee team. Haven't been in a lot of these. I guess just the first one against Kentucky was the only CBS game I think they've played. So I think the early tip-off, it may not be a huge factor, but I don't think it's something that works against Tennessee. And, you know, this group, they've been to Kansas, so I think it's not going to be anything. We've seen them in a situation where, man, Kansas was ready to go, their environment, their fans, after that fight in the Kansas State game, and Tennessee really handled that well. Some of that was early on, they got fortunate. Pons hit a couple threes that he doesn't always knock down, but those shots went in on that day. I think Tennessee needs something like that early. And that's kind of what's happened to Auburn these last couple games is they got behind against, especially with Missouri, a team that is capable defensively, and then they started taking too many threes. And so if Tennessee can get an advantage early on, can encourage Auburn to shoot threes, and if Auburn gets off to a slow start, then I think you've got some of the ingredients there for the Vols to find a way to get this thing done.
Will Shelton, game day on RockyTop.com. One more question for you, Will, kind of putting you on the spot. You're a basketball guy. The Elam ending was used at the end of the NBA All-Star game. Any thoughts on it in terms of the future of the sport? What do you think of the idea of putting points at a certain time onto the leading team's total, and then you play to that number?
So I'm so torn on this because it is such a good idea. But if you really wanted to take it, you know, all the way into the playoffs or whatever, then you're just kind of changing an entire historical conversation, which I also really love the history and going back and saying, oh, this team did this with 2 minutes left in 1987 or whatever.
Yeah.
You would just remove all that. It would really be kind of starting at a new point. The best comment I've heard on it was on Bill Simmons' podcast, where either he or Ryan Russillo was talking about that. If the roles were reversed, if basketball always started this way, if they started with the Elam ending, if Naismith and those guys started that way, and then now in 2020 they said, oh, no, we're going to change this to a clock the same as the first three quarters and it's going to turn into fouls and timeouts. If the roles were reversed, everyone would hate that change. They would loathe it. The endings would be so much less dramatic than what folks were used to in that sort of game point situation. And, it's a situation that, for the vast majority of us, are, you know, if we're playing pickup ball or at the YMCA or church league or whatever, you're usually playing to a fixed number anyway. So it's something people are familiar with. So
yeah.
I don't know that it'll ever get to the point where we're talking about game seven of the NBA finals, but it's just it's a better, and for pure basketball, it's just a purer system, I think, to get to the end. So at the very least, I don't ever see the All-Star game going back to anything different than what that was.
Yeah. They had a statement yesterday actually saying that the plan right now would be to bring it back for next year. And at least for that, an exhibition game where interest had gone away, it would at least help with that, which I think would be a good thing. What's going on at game day on RockyTop.com?
One of the things we looked at in the Auburn preview today is just when we're talking about teams being unlucky, Tennessee's schedule, when we talk about that thing at the start of the year, and you know you're going to play Wisconsin and Cincinnati and Memphis and Washington and all these teams, it's a bad year in general for great college basketball teams. And Tennessee did play really good teams from Kansas and Florida State. But so much of Tennessee's resume now, I mean, it's basically the bubble or worse. Washington's on something like 9 losses in a row. Memphis is well documented, is really struggling without James Wiseman in terms of their whole resume picture. VCU on the bubble, even the Alabama win at Alabama that at the time felt like, man, that's one you'll really hang your hat on. Not so much anymore. Blowing out Arkansas by 20 points or whatever, that's not really worth a whole lot anymore. So, you know, we could be talking about a situation where, again, this is why winning tomorrow is almost a must win, or else you need to win at Rupp, because there's a chance if VCU struggles down the stretch and Alabama doesn't recover, that Tennessee hasn't beaten an NCAA tournament team yet. And it's not because they didn't play a good schedule. It's just been a really weird year. So we looked at all that stuff today. Joel Hollingsworth with the four factors preview he does on all these matchups as well, kind of breaking down the Auburn game specifically. And a piece we did earlier in the week where, again, I think for Tennessee to get in this thing, they either need to go 4-1 down the stretch here, or we're going to be talking about multiple SEC tournament wins. So all that is, it's not must win tomorrow, but to me, it's about as close as you can come. So If you're looking for how the Vols can actually sneak in there and get it done, we did take a look at that a little earlier this week as well.
GameDayOnRockyTop.com is the website. Will, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much. Hope you have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
Will Shelton joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. Yeah, if you look at Tennessee's schedule that it's played, he's right. Tennessee's played a tough schedule with good teams. The highest ranking for Tennessee's wins right now among its opponents would be the KenPom rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas, number 48 in the country.
Oof. And falling. I mean, that's not even going to be where they end up.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, they'll be outside the top 50 for sure.
Yeah, Arkansas, 48th. Alabama, 55th. VCU, 54th. Washington, 65th.
And
so you have one top 50 win. That's Arkansas, number 48.
I think, you know, that's kind of what people expected going into this year. They might have expected
well, not going
wins.
In, I would say, but with the Lamonte injury changed then.
Good caveat. Yeah. Good caveat. Yeah, you're right. I'll rephrase. When you found out that he was out, and I know people wanted to buy in on Jordan Bowden being able to carry this alone, you see that it's very difficult for one player to do. The Lamonte injury really derailed NCAA tournament hopes, but there were bright spots. There have been little bright spots here and there. Their lack of consistency, though, has really hurt them.
Tennessee at Auburn tomorrow, noon tip-off. We'll have the game for you on the Sports Animal. We'll come back for the final segment of hour number two. I don't know how into the big fight you are tomorrow, Wilder versus Fury. I think you'll be entertained by what you hear from the press conference, though. That's next on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thanks for being with us. An hour from right now, we will put together our list of five things to watch this upcoming weekend with the Power Poll driven by Ted Russell Ford. Might dive into some Curb Your Enthusiasm this weekend. Very excited.
Oh, I am so hoping you do. The last episode, I will say, it was really foul, but it was so funny. Freddie Funkhauser's in there. Funkhauser's son is there. It's great. Isla Fisher was also in the episode.
Right.
Yeah. So it's been a wonderful season. Can I tell you just one thing?
No.
Okay. I'm so disappointed. It's not a big plot line.
But it's a plot line?
Yeah. Like a subplot. Subplot.
Okay. I'll find out when I watch it. We appreciate you being here today. 656-9900 is the phone number. It's frankly probably unlikely that I see Wilder versus Fury 2. It's expected to be a big one. The buildup has been huge. Pay-per-view fight coming up tomorrow night. But the press conference really got things going. In fact, with the weigh-in, the board stepped in and said, we're not going to have them together here because the press conference kind of went over the top. So here it is, a few snippets from Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury ahead of their big fight in Vegas tomorrow night.
Deontay Wilder spouting a lot of rubbish. He gave me an opportunity, did he? I give him his biggest paydays of his whole life, got him a big contract with Showtime, brought him to the biggest stage in the world, being Las Vegas, and here he is. This is how he thanks me. He's got a whole lot of appreciation for someone who's fed him, looked after him, and put millions in his account.
I don't believe none of the words that you say. You can't punch. I don't know what you're talking about, knocking somebody in the second round. You ain't never knocked nobody in no second round. You got pillows for fists. That's why I kept running through you. Because you can't punch.
Correction.
You
did not
punch.
Tell the last opponent in the second round.
You told that man to drop and he failed.
Wilder, this is a big act for him. He's very nervous underneath. I can see his jumper going in and out with his heartbeat pounding out of his chest. Terrified.
You believe he's nervous right now?
He's nervous. He's nervous as hell. He don't know what to expect. He doesn't know what to expect. And he's getting knocked out.
Your job is to stand up, man. That's what you
knocked out.
Vegas, bro.
Knocked out.
When I knock you out, go do stand-up comedy, bro. You got a career in that. You got a career in that.
And when I knock you out, you're going to be doing nothing apart from begging me for a rematch.
Just do that. You got a British accent, and that's what they laugh. They're not laughing with you. They're laughing at you because of your accent. You goofy. You're a big mama. You know what I'm saying? You're a big goofy, big mama.
You quite don't understand what you're saying because you speak English.
That's what you do.
So you speak in English right now.
So you understand what I'm saying. And if you don't, you know the sayings. What's understood don't have to be explained because come February 22nd, your body gonna be laying right there.
There you go. There's the buildup.
All right.
Nice preview little, of the fight and SEC football media days coming up in July.
Yeah. Nice little, I like how you threw that in there. That's some good trash talk. Not too many expletives where you had to just beep, beep, yeah. beep, beep, yeah. beep. I liked it.
Yeah.
They thought about it before they went in there.
Yeah, so hopefully
$5 million for each fighter.
Yeah, hopefully it's a big fight tomorrow night. Heavyweight title on the line, and then we'll probably see round three after that. Both fighters unbeaten going in.
Yeah. Man, you know, and for all the people that complain about where are the heavyweights, you know, what happened to this sport and all this, there you go. What's the fight? You said it's $80?
$80.
Woo.
$80 for the pay-per-view.
I think they need to figure out, I would go for a lesser price to try and get more people to buy it. That's where I would go.
In an ideal world, that's how it would be.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will go out to establishments that will carry the fight.
Do they still charge cover for when fights are on? That was a big thing when I was still in college. If there was a big like UFC fight or whatever, they would charge a cover charge.
Yeah. So
I mean, I obviously haven't been out for something like that in fish.
Back
many,
in the day
moons.
When I used to go out to places.
My life has really taken a turn towards boringness in the last 5 years.
Yeah, Eric Ainge brought up during his show in a position the same as us that it's going to be late on a Saturday night with kids at home, not going out somewhere. So then you have to make the decision. Do I want to pay $80? And of course, people get together and chip in and all that stuff. That obviously happens. But if it's just you and your family at home, then you're putting down $80 for yourself to watch it. You really have to care about the fight to do that.
Yeah, you really have to care. And you could honestly just wait 10 minutes after the fight. Clips are going to be everywhere. You're going to know on Twitter.
Remember the days of pay-per-views for college football games?
Yes.
Not that long ago.
That's been while we were working here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've heard some people complain about college basketball games on ESPN+. Plus. I can't remember anybody specifically doing it. But not that long ago, you just couldn't watch the games.
So that's true.
It is why, like, this is available through ESPN Plus and Fox Sports Go, so they both have it. So you can watch it through the stream. You still have to pay for it, or you can buy it on the cable and satellite. So it's available through them all on this one.
I do think it's better for the majority of people. Nothing's ever going to be perfect because people live in rural areas or people just can't afford internet prices and things like that. So you fall into those categories when you don't have Wi-Fi. I still think it's better to try and put everything on either satellite, cable, that combo, rather than the ESPN. I think everything, not that there's not a place for ESPN+, Plus, there totally is. They can do a lot with that programming. But to put marquee games, I mean, people in West Virginia, and I know because my father-in-law is from West Virginia and he's got family that lives up there. I mean, if you're out in the country, you have no shot at watching your program for some of these games.
I would also say there are some college football games, I wish they'd throw them back on pay-per-view so I wouldn't get exposed to them with some of those clunkers that get scheduled. We'll come back for a final hour of Sports 180 with Heather Harrington, Joel Silverberg. I'm Josh Ward. Get you ready for the weekend coming up on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.